Now, he was born into a family, and he had everything set for him. His dad was rich, had a lot of money. He made his money selling the color blue. His dad sold indigo from India and sent it all the way back to England so that people could make clothes that were colored blue, and they could make fabrics and curtains and things like that. And so he had made a lot of money, and he moved back to England, and he was raising his boys here in England. And C.T. was the kind of boy who, when he found something that he liked, something that he loved and enjoyed, that's the only thing he wanted to do. If he got into a certain game, he would play it again and again and again and learn every ins and outs of those strategies. And what C.T. picked up and loved was the game cricket. Now, cricket is not a game that we are incredibly familiar with. In fact, I'm not very familiar with it, but I'm going to tell you what I know about it, or what you need to know about it for the story. In cricket, it's like baseball. There's a bat and a ball, and you swing the bat and try to hit the ball. And then there is a thing called a wicket. And that wicket are three sticks that stick up out of the ground, and there are some blocks of wood on top of those sticks. And so what happens is the pitcher, he's called a bowler in cricket, he throws the ball, the batter hits the ball, and then there's two batters at one time. And those batters, after he hits the ball, they run back and forth and try to score as many points as they can before the other team picks up the ball and throws it at that at those blocks of wood and knocks them off of those sticks that are sticking up out of the ground. And so C.T., he loved cricket so much that one of the odd things about cricket is that if there's two wickets, there's one here and one there, and if I hit the ball, I can hit the wicket and get myself out, which would be really disappointing. If you're out there playing the game and you want to score points and you hit the ball and you're out immediately, he didn't want to do that. And he thought, you know, if I angle my bat just right, I will never hit my own wicket. And he stood in front of the mirror with that cricket bat, and he practiced again and again and again for hours, looking at himself, practicing his swing, swinging again and again. He was so laser-focused at it that when he started to play and when he got up into college, that before he would go up to bat, he picked one spot on the ground exactly the same distance as it was from where he stood and the pitcher stood, and he would stare at that spot constantly, even with the game going around, and he would keep his eyes right there so that when he went up to bat, his eyes were perfectly focused to see that ball as it left the bowler's hand and came running down the stretch so that he would be able to hit it perfectly. He was intense. A lot of people smoked back then, and he would leave any room where there was smoke because he didn't want his eyes to get messed up so that he couldn't see the ball very well. He was intense into this game, and it paid off, because he was really good. In fact, even while he wasn't playing professional cricket, he matched some of the records of the professional cricket players. So he was good at it. He had this intense focus. One day, his dad called him and his brothers from the college where he was at to come meet him. They had grown up in church. And church to CT, someone who was so focused into one thing, had been a thing on the side for him. It was like a pair of clothes that he put on Sunday and wore them and did his church thing, and then he left. And he didn't like Sundays at all. He didn't like having to go to church. But his dad, when he met up with his dad said, "Boys, you need to decide to follow Jesus." And they thought this was crazy because their dad was not the kind of guy who was in church. He was not the kind of guy who was excited about church stuff. But he had been converted. He had went to a rally where a preacher named D.L. Moody was preaching, and he had given his life to Jesus, and he wanted his boys to do the same. And he continued to teach them and tell them about Jesus, and eventually C.T. did come to know Jesus. But he didn't turn the laser focus off of cricket until a few years later when his brother was dying. And he was in the room with his brother as his brother was on the bed and really, really sick. And he thought about his brother, and all his brother wanted to do was to read the Bible and pray. And Charlie started to realize that the only thing that matters in life is what we do for Jesus. And the laser focus that he had on cricket began to shift away from cricket and began to shift onto what he would do for Jesus. And so he started serving with D.L. Moody at some of those rallies, helping out and teaching some classes and trying to bring people in so that they could hear about Jesus too. And then D.L. Moody went back to America, and Charlie thought, what am I going to do next? And God led him to eventually come in contact with the China Inland Mission with Mr. Hudson Taylor. And he had an interview with him. And in just a little while, he was on a boat sailing across the ocean to go to China to teach the gospel to the people in China. And once again, that laser focus, he dove all the way in to the work of missions in China. When he got there, in order to blend in with the mission, with the Chinese people, he shaved off his head so that he was bald. And then they put on a ponytail wig that made him look like he had hair like the Chinese people. He put on a silly hat and clothes that would have looked ridiculous for the Englishmen then, just so that he could blend in and try to minister. He walked miles and miles and more miles and more miles until his feet were blistered and hurt and sore and he could barely take another step on them, all to share the gospel with these people in China. While he was in China, his focus started to turn onto another thing, and that was a young lady named Priscilla Stewart. She caught his eye, and not just because she was beautiful, but because she was very much like him with that same intense passion and focus. She wrote about him proposing to her. He had proposed, and she had turned him down. He had asked her to marry him, and this is what he wrote to her, and she shared with others. He said, "You have neither the mind of God nor the will of God in the matter, but I have. And I intend to marry you, whether you will or not. So you had better make up your mind and accept the situation." And she says, "That's the reason I am Mrs. C.T. today. Because of a man who turned that laser focus onto this woman, and she became his wife." One of his blunders started here. Because that same type of laser focus that throws himself all in on one thing, he, as he was studying and spending time in the Bible, decided that the only book he would ever read was going to be the Bible. The only thing he ever needed to consult to know what God wanted him to do was the Bible. And he saw other books as distractions instead of as other counselors and brothers and sisters who were helping him know what God wanted from the Bible. And it would lead to some really bad decisions later in his mission's life. But he got really sick. Him and his wife stayed there. They worked together. In fact, I remember I told you his dad was rich. His dad, when he died, he gave them an inheritance that was worth almost, to us, it would be like $500,000. That's enough to buy houses. That's enough to buy like a lot of ice cream. I mean, that's tubs and tubs of ice cream, more than you could ever eat in your lifetime. Like that was a lot of money, and he gave it all away. In fact, he gave some of that money away to a guy Pastor Peter talked about a few lessons ago when he was talking about Mr. George Mueller with the orphanages. He gave a lot of his money to Mr. Mueller to help out with that work. And so with that laser focus, he didn't want to be distracted by all that money. He threw it aside, gave it away to other people who were doing work of God around the world, and focused instead intensely on what God had for him and trusted that God would provide for him, and God did provide. He got really sick, though, in China. In fact, so sick that he almost died, and they had to go back to England. After he got a little bit better in England, as he was starting to teach and travel and preach there in England, he decided that what he was going to do next was to go do more mission work. And he ended up going to India, where his dad had made his living. And he worked among some of the same people his dad worked with. His dad, one of his dying wishes had been that the people in India would not just know the stud name as people who made money and trafficked in indigo plants. He wanted the stud name to be known as ambassadors for Jesus. And so Charlie took that commission on himself, and he went and spent several years in India again. And then he got sick. And then he came back to England. But once again, he would not stay put. And he saw a sign on a door that said, "Cannibals want missionaries." Cannibals are people who eat people as part of their culture. And so, of course, cannibals want missionaries, but they want them for breakfast. They don't want them for good mission work. But this intrigued Charles' sense of humor and his sense of mission, and he started thinking about the people in Africa. And he began investigating and found out there were thousands and thousands of tribes of people who had never heard about Jesus. And he thought, I still can give myself to that, even though I'm sick. And he was 50 years old at this point. And the doctor said, "You cannot go. If you go to India, you will die. Your sickness will beat you, and you will die. You do not need to go." But he prayed about it, and he decided that God wanted him to go anyway, and he left. And this is when he made another one of his big blunders, that focus, that intense desire to work and to do what God wanted him to do. You know, his wife was sick, too. She had a heart condition and was sick in bed and couldn't get up, and he left her. While he was on his way to Africa, he got a message saying she was getting worse, and he kept going and told his wife just to pray, it'll be okay. And then, thankfully, she was okay. She did get better, but he left and spent, it was 50, he was 1910 when he left, and he did not leave Africa for the next 21 years. He died in 1931. He did not see his wife until 1929. That's 19 years after he left to go to Africa. And even when she came and visited him, she was only there for 13 days and then had to go back to England. So he left his wife and his daughters back in England, ignoring his family to focus on the mission that he had in front of him with Africa. He made an enormous blunder to go do the work of God. Later, his girls would come and be with him and work with him, but they found him incredibly hard to work with. He was a jerk to work with, because he felt that everyone that was there, all these missionaries that were with him that he started to gather around him, should all be just like him. You know what that meant? That meant waking up at 4 o'clock every morning and staying up till 10 o'clock at night, working tirelessly the entire day. And that was day after day after day, and he demanded the exact same rigors of work of everyone else as he did of himself. And that just wasn't something that people wanted to constantly do. They didn't feel like that was what God wanted them to do. And so he was a pain to work with. But his time in Africa, he started the Heart of Africa mission that later became, they changed and called the World Evangelism Crusade. And there were missionaries that he gathered, over 80 people there with him that were serving and helping and preaching the gospel to these people and these tribes. He took the gospel to tribe after tribe after tribe that had never heard about Jesus, and he told them about Jesus' love. He ministered to those cannibals and talked with them and sat and ate with them and enjoy. He didn't eat with them in that way, just to clarify. But he fellowshipped with them. He shared the gospel with them to see them come to know Jesus. And that World Evangelism Crusade that he started is still going today, and his son-in-law took it over, and instead of just the 80 missionaries he had around him, his son-in-law, when he passed it on to the next guy, they had 800. And then after that, now there's like almost 2,000 missionaries working with these people. So even though a man who had singular focus caused him to do some incredibly dumb things, God still used that singular focus to do some incredibly good things for his work. And just like some of the people in the Bible, like Samson or like Rahab or others, God used a man who wasn't the best of men to do some really incredible work for his mission. And that is the story of Charles Thomas Studd.